Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 52. I'm Jerry Iverson with my guest Christina Call, who wrote her PhD dissertation on the nonprofit organization Alternatives. If you think this is going to be a boring academic conversation, please give us the chance to prove your initial reaction wrong. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue after the interview. I had the pleasure of meeting Christina on a speaking tour in Colorado several years ago. She asked my permission to write her PhD dissertation in sociology on alternatives, then called Alternatives for Simple Living. I gladly agreed. I supplied her with documents, and over 4 years, she interviewed members of Alternatives and board members. Read Meeting Christina, my travelogue, post number 225, and the links in the show notes. Where this story gets especially interesting for me is that after I retired at the end of 2007, she continued her research. My successors moved Alternatives to Colorado early in 2008. I continued working as a volunteer until early May because my goal was to make the transition to a new leadership as seamless as possible. Then when Alternatives was shuttered by my successors in early 2011, Christina was there. Her dissertation was completed and accepted in 2013. Although the reason Alternatives closed may be about funding, after all, the economic downturn of fall 2008 swept many good things away, we can see a cautionary tale in Christina's research. If you'd like to read her entire dissertation, you can order a copy from her. I give her contact information in the show notes. I find it so very interesting, though I do have a strong personal interest in her subject. You can read the abstract or summary from the link in the show notes. Also, there are links to other historical documents and pictures. By the way, the names have been changed. Even Alternatives is called Simple Paths. Christina, what caught your attention about Alternatives that steered you toward us for your dissertation work?
Well, Jerry, I knew kind of going in on the dissertation that I wanted to learn about groups of people that are focused on living simply. And I know that there's obviously some secular groups that are out there, and I could have looked for simplicity circles, and I had already kind of been doing that. But I also wanted to understand kind of the general relationship that was going on between living simply and religious and spiritual ideals, because, you know, as you know, it's kind of rooted in a particular tradition that has at least some tenets of religious and spiritual aspects. So because of that, I really wanted to find a group that was focused on that. And I was having a hard time finding a group, or at least a face-to-face group. I was finding some stuff online, but not much on a traditional group setting that I could walk into and physically visit. And then I had a colleague of mine pass along that you were doing a presentation at a church, and I had no idea what I was walking into, but I thought this has got to be it. So when I came in and sat down and you went through the steps of living simply within the actual conversation that was happening at for the congregation, I was sold. I thought, oh, this is fantastic. I loved hearing the information. And then from there, I walked up and met you, and the rest is history.
Yes, indeed. Well, I understand that you were prepared, though, for this moment by some personal evolution.
Yeah, my own life, I actually write this in my dissertation that, you know, I kind of grew up in this 80s generation of the me generation, and actually coming from a working class background, I actually wasn't able to achieve all of the me consumer-based products and gizmos out there, but I was very intrigued with the whole idea of why this was such a big push in our society. So as time went on, I, you know, started doing some self-reflection and really trying to push myself on thinking about maybe living a simpler lifestyle overall. And at the time, I had learned about a particular way of kind of eating locally through my church. So I had learned about CSAs through my church that I was at. And I started to put these two ideas together, that people were wanting to live a more conscious lifestyle, as well as how religion is kind of influencing their ideas. So I wanted to see, well, how does that look out there in the world of simple living specifically? And so that kind of set me on the track academically to be thinking of what is voluntary simplicity and how does that look with religion as its foundation.
Well, tell us more about the actual process of writing your dissertation.
Well, so I think over, well, other than saying that the process is painful, because it is, but the process overall is, I think I feel I need to give some kind of background of where my positionality is, and along with the aspects of voluntary simplicity and coming from a religious background, I also take a qualitative approach to sociology as opposed to quantitative. And I think the easiest way to address the differences between that is that qualitative really focuses more on depth, and quantitative really focuses on breadth, if you will. So my role and goal was to try to focus on getting a lot of in-depth interviews, trying to get a deeper understanding of how people, of people's stories and their experiences overall. And then my goal as a researcher in particular is to take that point of view and then understand what the larger themes are that are coming out of all of these different kinds of conversations. And so I kind of take this qualitative approach, but then also when doing research, you have to back it up kind of with this like theoretical frame or perspective, if you will. And the perspective that I decided to focus on was symbolic interaction. And all that means is it's the idea that people interact and produce meanings about things. And so we're negotiating all the time and trying to understand how something, you know, what is given meaning. So, for example, like what constitutes what's considered breakfast? Well, groups of people, we all kind of collectively came together and made decisions about what breakfast includes. Or how do we, you know, construct the idea of race, right? And so, again, that kind of also is where we're all kind of interacting and negotiating what these particular meanings are to produce what race is or produce what breakfast is. And so my role was to figure out, well, what are the meanings that people are giving about simple living? So that was really the main premise that I'm coming from. So I listened to people's explanations and their stories, and again, look for these themes to try to understand what does simple living mean to all of these people that I'm coming in contact with. And of course, the other aspect of that is how does religion play into this conversation about living simply, you know, in 2009 through 14. So that was my goal, and that's kind of the process of it. Is I just go and do these in-depth writing, based off of these interviews that I've been doing, along with collection of all the emails through the board, and as well as being kind of a pseudo board member, and showing up at all of these board meetings. And then I also went to the various different presentations that were given throughout those years and various ways in which they engaged with the community at large and talked to the people when I was there. And again, get information and observe what's going on and take notes. And then I bring all that information together and using that framework and look for those themes, and then that's generally how that dissertation came about.
Well, it's interesting that of your 40-plus in-depth interviews, most of them were with women.
Yes, that tends to fall along the lines with previous research, that the majority of the review of the interviews that I had are with women, and that is partly what I found in the themes, if you will, in the research. So women are the ones that are kind of taking the bull by the horns, if you will. They're socializing their kids, they're socializing their husbands, they're socializing their friends into giving these tips and tricks and ways to engage in living a simple lifestyle. And so that, while it wasn't necessarily new, because the research has been consistently kind of backing this up, it is, I think, then strengthens that bigger issue of how women are kind of at the forefront of the simple living movement.
Well, tell us about some of the sociological conclusions of your dissertation.
Well, I think there's a few key things that I could bring up that I think you would find of interest. I think we could see how the role of religion overall is important in how it shapes simple living identities and the commitment to simple living, as well as the role of religion kind of being problematic to a source of contention, if you will, on an organizational level or on a congregational level and largely on an institutional level. So the role of religion actually became a really interesting direction. Even though I knew I was going to be looking at that, there were some things that I found quite surprising along the way. To talk about how religion influences the identity of simple livers, I found really fascinating in the sense that religion helps to foster what I would consider what I term the concept overconforming moral self. So by that, I just mean that it's people that are wanting the goal to be better moral people. Okay, so all the folks that I talked to, their main driving force was to be better moral people. And part of the ways in which they helped to strengthen or produce a particular identity about being moral was using the ideology coming from Christianity, progressive Christianity, I'm speaking of, overall. So they focused on responsible stewardship. They talked quite often about responsible stewardship and how it's a calling, you know, to be a caretaker to the earth. Many people brought in Jesus as using Jesus as an example for them in their daily lives, right? As a form of inspiration or encouragement. And then because Jesus was an example, he kind of led as an example, and therefore they too could participate in living a simple life. And then almost everyone talked about how Jesus is this kind of form of social justice, right? That Jesus's view that you want to kind of do unto others, you want to make sure that you are, empathizing and reinforcing a particular stance of helping people in some way. So it was these three particular themes that came up with my respondents talking about how religion influenced, them in their daily lives. And then along with that, I discussed three different emotions that the respondents also pull on. And these three emotions, which ended up being guilt and pride and frustration, how these emotions, along with the religious framework of discourse, kind of created, if you will, coupled together this idea of an overconforming moral self. So in this sense, you can see how religion is really influencing the person and their decisions about living a simple lifestyle. So that's one aspect of how religion kind of influences and co-creates, if you will, simple living identities. And then to expand that, I was really intrigued by how I just thought, oh, of course churches and congregations are going to be completely for, if you will, and support simple living ideals because simple living has been rooted historically with religion and spiritual tenets. So I was shocked when I actually found out that there's much more tension that exists between a religious as a congregation in an institutional level. And that played out in a variety of ways as well. And I think that included, so pastors, because I did, some of my respondents were pastors, and then obviously all the people that I interviewed would go to church. And they talked about how, you know, it's difficult for pastors to really just kind of lay claim to how we should all live a simple lifestyle, because it would be seen as very political in nature. So they, you know, they really kind of wanted to pull back from that. But they would try to bring in some practical components about how maybe we should live a simple lifestyle, and they would focus on green environmental aspects, maybe trying to get the congregation involved in you know, not using styrofoam cups, for example, or using fair trade coffee. And I think the other thing that I found was how congregations as a whole really just kind of operate off of simple living in that well-worn path of simple living, which is actually consuming, but consuming in an appropriate way, right? In a green way, an environmental way, but it's still consuming. So that would be one aspect that the congregations would reinforce simple living tactics. They would also reinforce simple living tactics because everybody I spoke to said social justice is central to living a simple lifestyle. So everybody also talked about all of the various ways that they help in their congregation and in volunteering. And so volunteering was huge in that respect. But again, it was volunteering in a certain way. So it was never, that wasn't ever challenged. I never challenged that. I just wanted to know about it. But most people talked about how they volunteered and, you know, homeless shelters or collecting money for you know, battered women and families and, you know, various things like that. Institutionally, religion, there was a tension with religion. And this is where we can see a coupling that's going on between, say, what your organization, past organization that you were affiliated with, and then the institution of religion. So while religion as an institution, I think, reinforces the idea of living simply, there isn't always necessarily a place on an institutional level, like a department, if you will, within various denominations to where they foster simple living practices and tactics, or offer workshops or offer information to give to the congregations. It's kind of piecemealed out and it's kind of sporadic. And then during the time that I was doing the research, I found, you know, I think it was the ELCA had a group focused, a department that focused and had simple living embedded in it. I think it was its hunger program. And then that's actually been taken out, if I recall correctly. So institutionally, while there might be that larger topic of, yes, we love simple living, it's very difficult to translate that to a congregational level and then therefore to the pulpit level. So that's some of the interesting findings that I have, that I came across.
Interesting indeed. Thank you. I just want to let you know that Christine will be glad to provide you a copy of her dissertation. If you want to contact her, and her contact information will be in the show notes for this episode. I found an interesting irony, and I don't mean to take much time with this, that I think this is part of your concept of overconforming moral self, where you talked about simple living as deciding what is enough in your life, trying to figure out what is enough stuff. Yet at the same time, there was the tension of never enough simple living. There was always a desire for more simple living, more techniques, more tips. I found that kind of ironical.
When I was putting everything, writing and putting everything together, people would say, well, so what is simple living? And I thought, oh my gosh, where do I begin? It runs the gamut, right? And the spectrum is wide. And so what that, to me, answering that question, you know, what is the meaning of civil living to you? And, you know, and what does that look like to you in your daily life? I had a lot of people talk about a lot of different practices. And so it was hard to necessarily pinpoint a specific example or anything. I mean, I had to broadly, you know, articulate it. And part of that is volunteering and social justice frame, part of, you know, falling under the umbrella of green and environmental, falling under the umbrella of being with family and not working as much if possible. But along that lines, those lines, I also found that some people would make claims, which actually what I did, decided not to incorporate in the dissertation, because at a certain point you have to, you know, for editing purposes, right, because you could just keep on writing. I found that some people would make claims of doing too much simple living. So there might be the extremists, right? So some practices were considered a little too extreme, and whereas other practices are considered appropriate. So, for example, the appropriate tactic would be where, and that's where people are trying to find those tips and tricks, right? Is what are the ways that I can conserve water, or you know, as far as like showers or having a shorter shower, or riding the bus as opposed to the car. So those are some of the appropriate tactics, or fair trade food or local food consumption. And then the what would be considered extreme, and it would be looked at in two ways, in somewhat reverence, like, oh, this person lives completely off the grid. And so they would talk about like, oh, that's amazing that they can do that. I could never do that. But then at the same time, there might be that conversation of, but that person also doesn't flush their toilet throughout the whole day trying to save water. That's a little extreme. So I would get the gamut of what's considered appropriate and not appropriate, but then I would also get the, you know, oh, but we are, you know, desperately wanting to have some tips and tricks go on of what we can do to reinforce an anti-consumptive lifestyle.
Well, thank you for that. I don't want to be maudlin, but I would like you to very briefly summarize your conclusions about how alternatives for simple living, or as it was originally known as alternatives, and it's known in your dissertation as Simple Path, came to an end as a national non-for-profit organization.
It ran out of money. That would be the fastest and easiest way to say that. I think because of, like I had talked about, that institutional religious support was dwindling. And I think the biggest hit that happened for Simple Paths was the loss of the yearly publication that they would come out with. And that was the biggest hit. And then it was kind of like a bleeding artery at that point. It was a matter of trying to Band-Aid as much as they could in trying to come up with different resources and publications. And in trying to do that, that's where they were having to negotiate the idea of being inclusive in religious ideas or try to be exclusive. And that was a really hard balance that the organization had to try to figure out. So because of that problem in trying to negotiate being inclusive, you know, should it be where we incorporate Buddhism as well as Christianity? And then what types of Christianity? And do we allow other aspects of like New Age work, things like that? Or do we really kind of rein it in and just focus on issues of that are focused completely on more of a Christianity or progressive Christian belief system? Considering that that publication focused on Jesus as its kind of its main driver, that was very difficult to negotiate outside of Jesus because of that exclusive idea of that publication. So the tension became a little problematic in that, trying to bring in the environmental component regarding an anti-consumptive lifestyle. And a lot of, like I said, some institutional support waned a bit because of the possibility of, you know, green being done too much, you know, and everybody knows green. So why do we want to focus on that? That's not really new. But at the same time, that's what some people are also clamoring for. So, and this isn't to point fingers on any of the religious organizations and denominations. This is just me looking as a researcher going, well, isn't this interesting to see how you have these inclusive and exclusive ways in which we think about religion and spirituality, and you have an organization that's trying to negotiate, what do we do? Do we be inclusive or exclusive? And who's our audience? Are we trying to stay narrow, you know, not narrow-minded, but narrow-focused? Or do we want to kind of expand this out more? So I think that was also a conundrum that came up for the organization overall.
Well, if you don't mind me asking you personally, where is your interest level now in the voluntary simplicity movement?
Well, I can find it completely fascinating. I'm still, as a researcher, I think that it's, my own personal life, I try to do, again, as many tactics as I can in trying to live a simple lifestyle. But as we all know, we all have kind of our justifications for what we're going to pick and what we're going to choose and not choose in doing practices. So for me, that's an interesting thing to think about on a personal level. On a professional level, I want to do, you know, more research that's focused on voluntary simplicity. And I think most of the research shows, and what I've also found in my own research, is that living simply is not an easy, it's not something that you can do easily. And it actually costs a lot, because if you are going to make those choices and you want to, you know, say you want to eat locally, that actually might cost more than it would to just buy some processed packaged food item. So it actually is kind of expensive, if you will, to live a simple lifestyle. So it's always been considered kind of a white middle class social movement. And so what my goal is to actually go into the communities that are coming in, that have a lower income base, that as well as it not being white, but let's look at people of color. And how are they defining living a simple lifestyle? And what are the tactics that they're using? And how are they defining it? And does that differ from white middle class social movement definitions of living a simple life? So those are things that are interesting to me that I'd like to look into.
Excellent. Are there any other things you're doing professionally now or that you're planning to do for the future that you'd like to share?
Well, as it stands, I'm teaching at Fort Lewis College, and I'm also teaching some online classes for the University of Colorado in Boulder, and I'm on the job market. And one of the things that I've been trying to do is to incorporate more conversation and classroom dialogue about the ideas of social movements generally, but then specifically looking at simple living as a tactic and how does the lifestyle of an individual influence larger social change.
You've been listening to my conversation with Christina Call, who wrote her PhD dissertation on alternatives. She mentioned briefly how the organization was disbanded after 38 years. Part of that was a change in denominational priorities. In the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, with which I'm affiliated and most acquainted, simple living was considered lifestyle ministry, part of the Hunger Program. In the ELCA, simple living was championed by Bob Seitz, the hunger educator. He retired in early 2008, shortly after I did. You can hear an interview with him on Simple Living Works podcast, episode number 31. He continues his efforts as a volunteer through his 3 times a week blog called Simple Enough for the Lutheran Magazine Online. I list his column titles in my blog, Simple Living Works Weekly Digest. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. or on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click on window number 3. We'll hear about the change of focus for the Simple Living Works blog in episode 48 and in recent blogs. We've had some interesting response recently in regard to Simple Living Works Weekly Submit to Whose Birthday, plus Fall Festival Resources. I heard from our good friend Charlie Kyle in Chicago, and he said briefly, "Thanks, Gerald. I'm especially impressed by your original cartoons that always transmit a great message." Thanks, Charlie. And we heard from Barbara Chung, who said, "We are planning to do an alternative Christmas workshop at our church next month and would like to have copies of Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? Number 27 for participants. Please let me know when these will be available and how we can obtain them. Thanks very much." Well, greetings to you, Barbara. Glad to hear from you. Whose Birthday 2010 was the last edition distributed on paper. Since then, I have published it on the internet. The 2015 edition is scheduled to be on our website in September. And when it's ready, I'll announce it in Simple Living Works weekly blog and monthly e-news. Now, all of you are welcome to assemble and copy a version that meets your local needs. All of our resources and services are now free of charge. The classic Advent Christmas resource, Whose Birthday Is It Anyway?, is available in multiple formats in 2015 to meet your personal, family, and community needs. First, Whose Birthday Number 27 is new, free online collection. Use as much as you need in print or online. Also, contribute your art and articles to Simple Living Works for it. Number two, Whose Birthday Number 16 is scheduled for release as a Simple Living Works podcast series late this fall. This legacy resource can also be used as text or audio. It was selected because its calendar matches the lectionary cycle, C. And thirdly, do it yourself, Whose Birthday. Yes, you can produce your own customized DIY Whose Birthday. First of all, create. Select the items most appropriate for a congregation or group, including graphics. Add some of your own original material if you choose. Secondly, produce it. Assemble the items in an attractive way using publishing software, probably already on your computer, for a paper version, or electronic software for internet-based version. You can use PDFs of a paper version or a template for a newsletter version. Thirdly, distribute it. Hand out copies to your congregation or group at a worship service or meeting or by mail. Make additional copies available to share with friends and relatives. Do not sell for a profit under the Creative Commons license. And fourthly, promote it. Tell people where it's available using social media and any other ways available to you. Newsletters, worship bulletins, posters, etc. All the links for the following are given in the show notes and in the recent Simple Living Works email, e-news called DIY Whose Birthday. So, to make your selections, visit the Whose Birthday Index by Editions. Also, check out the alphabetical index of Advent Christmas alternative articles taken from Whose Birthday and from our Christmas packs. Also, choose from appropriate graphics at Spirit of Simplicity Quotes and Art, and from Worship Alternatives. Visit our complete thematic/seasonal index of Advent Christmas resources. For help with your workshop, visit Parts 1 and 2 of Simple Living 101, Tools for Activists, Shy or Bold. I plan to continue issuing podcasts of audio from Whose Birthday, and to hear past episodes, visit the index at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. For audio and video resources, visit our AV index. Remember, all the links are given in the show notes and in the recent Simple Living Works e-news called DIY or Do It Yourself Whose Birthday. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to our podcast and our weekly blog are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, at iTunes. We produce that with the One Earth Project. We do not solicit or accept donations of cash, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, then click About. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. If you're new to Simple Living Works podcast and would like more basic information about us, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It's not a list of rules, nor a living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply that others may simply love, as our closing theme song proclaims. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of living more with less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed those standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The 3 parts of our mission are elaborated in text and audio. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. So others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can live. Mm-hmm.